Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the call. It's good to have you here with us tonight. Bear with me just for a moment. I'm going to take off the chimes. The Q&A mode is on. That means that we've got it basically muted as you come on the line. If you would like to participate this evening, just press star 6. That'll take you off of mute. You'll know you're off mute as you call Dave, 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 and I will acknowledge that you're on the line with you as soon as I hear you. This is your call. This is your Tuesday night call. This is our celebration, of course, to take on those things that matter most and an opportunity for you to share your successes, challenges, anything that I can do to be of service to you. I'll do my very, very best this evening. We'd like to welcome all of our guests who are visiting with us tonight. Thank you for being a part of this call. We do hope that you'll talk to the person who invited you so that you can be with us on every Tuesday night on these calls. We spend time going through the 6 qualities of an intentional creator. We measure 36 characteristics of an intentional creator in our assessment. This assessment is a mathematically driven assessment. It comes out of the University of Tennessee. It's called Axiological Mathematics. It's spooky accurate. Sitting in my family room right now is a gentleman. I did his assessment this afternoon, and he said it was really scary accurate. Yeah, it measures the way we think, not what we think, but how we think. And from there, we know the risks of certain kinds of thought patterns, and we can share those with you to assist you in identifying the thought processes that may be sabotaging your efforts. We'll also identify the strengths, those characteristics, that are just waiting for you to unleash their power. Very exciting assessment. You can take that online if you haven't taken it already at intentionalcreation.com. If you're invited by a friend, have them send you their link so that they can serve you with your assessment. So you take the assessment, then we take the 6 qualities of an intentional creator. Each quality involves 6 very specific characteristics. The first quality of an intentional creator is called connecting with people. This is what Og Mandino writes, and he calls it the greatest secret of success in all ventures. He says, muscle can split a shield and even destroy life, but only the unseen power of love, agape love, which is a heightened level of awareness, only this will open the hearts of men. Until I master this art, I'm no more than a peddler in the marketplace. This is the very first quality. He says, with this one alone, we can succeed. We go from connecting with people. Starting next week, we're going to dive into goals and expectations, using our mind constructively. The majority of you on the phone have a very vivid imagination, very visual thinkers, and quite often will engage in destructive thought processes such as fantasy, catastrophe, counterfeit pleasure. Next week, I will explain each one of those in great detail. So if you ever drift into those areas, you'll know that you're in a very destructive activity. We'll also discuss the 5 constructive ways of thinking, which is mental rehearsal, exploration, inspiration, planning, goal setting, and problem solving. These are the ways in which we consciously use our mind to receive inspired ideas, impressions, and solutions to problems that ignite our passion. You'll hear this again next week. If we have you wired to a functional MRI and you get one of these insights, we will watch parts of your brain light up that you normally don't use. It literally lights something up inside of us when we get one of these ideas. And that igniting of our passion, a willingness to suffer for something we love, will drive our discipline and our focus and our effort and our action. If you want to have passion and be in passion-driven action, stop working. Now, that doesn't mean you won't be engaged all day long and into the night, but it won't seem like work. It won't be boring, mundane, repetitious anymore. It'll be exciting. If you want to live like that, you're going to want to be here next week when I share with you how to constructively use your mind to get those inspired ideas, impressions, and solutions to problems. That's what is manifest when we visualize. Tangible reality isn't. and we learn how to stay present in the now, focused on the next task, the next millimeter of creation to bring us one step closer to our dreams. We have a clear vision now of where we're headed. I was in a coaching session this afternoon with a client. We got so excited. Huge pipe company. We identified the sales goal. We identified what needed to be done in the next month, the next week, the next day. We identified pipe that was not moving. We started mentally rehearsing what could be done with that pipe. We came up with two or three really cool ideas that nobody had ever considered before. And he's going to jump on them tomorrow and see if he can move 20,000 feet of pipe with a new creative idea that he came up with while we're mentally rehearsing. Boy, is he on fire. That's the way we want to be living. Those are the first three, connecting with people, goals and expectations, using our mind constructively, then living in the now, completing tasks. Then we take on that little nasty piece called resistance and resentment and the need to be right, discipline and structure. And then we take on joy in the journey, gratitude. How can we want more, but yet be grateful for what we have? Oh, I can't wait to share those principles with you. What happens when there is sorrow in our lives, joy in our lives, managing time, expectation, remuneration, recognition? We'll discuss all those pieces in that section. Then we'll move to self-esteem. And we'll talk about what causes self-esteem challenges and how to heal self-esteem. But tonight we get to do the second half of connecting with people. This is just my favorite piece. Last week we talked about a couple of basic principles. One, that we all have walls of resistance. Dr. Hartman, who did the math for our assessment, measured that in a non-adversarial relationship, a person holds back, on average, this is non-adversarial, this is friends, good friends, coworkers, spouses, non-adversarial relationship, they hold back on average 40%. 40% of their cooperation and productivity until they've been intrinsically validated as a human being. We're going to talk about intrinsic validation tonight. How can you get that really? How do you get the walls down? How do you get that cooperation productivity flooding out? What's it like to be in corporate America today? To be an employee who's not being validated or an employer who's not getting the productivity they need? Oh, if we could have every employer in the world on this phone and we could share these principles with them, we could ignite productivity in this country. Oh, my goodness. And we're going to do it for each one of you tonight. So we all have walls of resistance. Do we throw up on them? Are we autocratic? My way, the highway, you know, get to work or kick you out, fire you, throw you out. Is that how we run a business? Our business? Is that how we treat people? Or do we catch the vision that instead of throwing up or beating down their wall with a hammer, that we use our empathy and our intuition, that we step into their world and we listen? Last week we talked about the tools that we use, empathy and intuition, our life experience. I shared with you this quote, "Our character has been forged in the furnace of adversity." Just think about who we are. We know what pain feels like. Now, I wonder if there's anybody on this call who's exempt from pain. It seems like we're living in a time where there's increasing levels of stress and pain. We cannot change the past. However, we can choose to use these reference points as a rich resource to assist us in better understanding and connecting with people. When we use our life experiences in the service of others, we will finally find purpose in our suffering, joy in our journey, and much-needed healing in our souls. I was having a conversation this week with one of our coaches. And I've asked her to be with us this evening. She's on this call all the time. Anyway, Crystal, we ask our coaches to contact every single Augmandino customer. Show up for them and serve them. Invite them to take an assessment. Give them a free debrief. Explain to them what it means. Help them get whatever tools they can economically handle without causing challenges in their life to begin the journey of intentionally creating something different in their life. And they're in the process of doing that. Crystal was in the process of doing that. And she had some very difficult challenges. Crystal, are you with us this evening? You may still be on mute. Just press star 6 if you would, please.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, Crystal. Would you share what happened to you over the course of the last 2 or 3 weeks? Probably the best example of empathy and intuition that I can remember in the recent past.
Well, as you know, I was coaching with this gal, and she seemed to be having some challenges that we were going through. And she had talked to you a few times, and unfortunately, you know, she also had some other challenges. Her work and just how everything was working out, there was so much disappointment in her life. And I had last talked to her at the end of July, or at the end of June, and we went to Texas, and I came back, and I've been calling and emailing her just kind of light things. And not this past Sunday, but the Sunday before last, I got a call. And it was her neighbors that told me that she had passed away. And she had 16 years sobriety, and her dog had died. I knew that her dog was sick, and she just curled up on the bed. And, you know, I don't know what exactly happened because they're not at liberty to tell me that, but she died. And I was so beside myself about that. I called you a few times privately, and you had a couple sessions with me, and I kept asking myself, wow, am I blaming myself for this? And interestingly, I went back over our principles, and I reread the Chicago Dream and realized that I had a connection there. And I was also talking to a few clients that I was coaching through the weeks, and I saw a connection that I had was dragging around in my sack. I had connected a case that I had lost, a huge case at the end of December, and the judge kept shutting me out and didn't want to hear anything about my client and just revoked his $100,000 bail and threw him back in jail. And
that's in your work as an advocate to the court, right?
Right. That's prior to having these principles. I was listening to the Og tapes and, you know, reading my scrolls every day, but I that was before I called the office. That is the thing that connected me with calling your office and trying to get connected back in. And so here it was, exactly the same thing. Almost, you know, I was blaming myself, you know, did I talk to her enough? Was I too hard on her and everything? And I decided, you know, as you know, I've been talking to a few people, and I have a son that is also into his disease, and he is getting ready to face a 7.5 to 15 year prison sentence. He didn't kill anyone. He just had a DUI, and I'm not trying to make light of that for anyone who's listening. It's not just a DUI. He's a repeat offender, so this is his second case, and it's serious enough that they're going to give him a huge prison sentence. So I'm thinking in my mind about the person that I just coached with and the sack that I'm dragging around, and wow, I need to spend some time with him before he goes off and, you know, really work with him and all that stuff. So the week before last, I went off with him, and we enjoyed ourselves at a car show and all that stuff, and he reconnected with this lady. And I went back up to Tahoe, and this was on Sunday night. He stopped by where this girl was, and the lady had told him, look, you know, you have to go in and deal with your stuff, and when you get done with that and, you know, you're not trying to get sober for me, then, you know, we'll talk. And I noticed that he was kind of depressed and everything, and I didn't think very much of it. Now, every single day that we'd come back from the car show, I was so tired from walking around and listening to all those cars and everything, I fell asleep. This particular day, my husband had come up with me, so I stayed awake, and he went and got in the bath, and, you know, I wasn't thinking anything of anything, and all of a sudden some time went by, my husband fell asleep on the couch, and I was thinking, wow, I made a pizza and he didn't get up, and so I went and I started knocking on the bathroom door, and he wasn't answering the door, and all of a sudden I was hearing something, and so I went and got a knife and I opened it, and there he was in the bathtub drowning, 25 years old, and he had overdosed, and that noise that I was hearing was him drowning. So I woke my husband up, and I had him run in there, and I called 911, and, you know, he was trying to revive him, and I hung up with 911. We were getting ready to pull him out of the bathtub and try to revive him, and so the 911 showed up, and they got him going and everything, and they took him over to the hospital, and the horror just kept going on and on. He left the hospital while he had the IV in, and you know, I just really, Dave, I had to bring my strengths together and say, okay, what is it that you do? You search people out. And so I thought about my skills of finding people like I do, and I brought the red car in the middle of town and started calling different hotels and saying I was going to get a room someplace, and sure enough, boom, out of the woodwork he comes. And so he's safe now. But that was absolutely devastating, and I just felt like I needed to kind of fall apart and, you know, all this stuff, and I called you on the phone, and, you know, you were just really, you know, clear about, okay, he's safe, and you're safe, and this is a time to pull your bootstraps up and, you know, get back into working your principles. And, you know, I can't say that I really even lost a beat to it all. I just got back home. They had emailed me the list of people that I needed to call and find out how they're doing and all that stuff. And I said to you, Dave, what am I supposed to say to these people? And you said, they're going to say, oh, I'm busy. And, you know, you're going to say, okay, I can relate to that, but my son's in trouble and this is what's happening to me. And I did exactly what you told me to do. And I felt great all week long. I was able to talk to my people on the phone and show up for people and talk to them, and I was centered back in my principles, and I talked about the partnership and the ultimate connection, and I connected with people, and when the courts called, and I took care of business exactly as I had to do, and the connection here, in case I didn't make it clear, was me dragging around that sack from last year when I lost that court case. It was someone who wasn't even related to me, and I couldn't even function. And now I have these principles that I am working every day in my life, and I'm sad that my client is not here anymore, and I'm even more sad that my son made the poor choice that he makes, because now I have no idea what he's facing currently coming up. But I'm able to go on, Dave. Effectively go on.
You know, when you shared this with me, and you put a clinic on for our coaches on Monday about this very discussion, those who were training with you earlier in the year, for those of you who are listening, I just want you to reflect the Chicago Dream is in the material. Talks about the dream I had when I was in Chicago about dragging that sack with all of those things in it and then emptying it out and engraving it on my heart and making that decision to ask myself, I wonder if anyone else is suffering these things, and turning my thoughts to someone else. And that's what Crystal did. In the middle of something that was just crushing her, she applied the principle, I wonder if anyone else is suffering. And she went out to serve, stepped into their world with her life experience. And I know, I've seen some of the emails that she's received back from some of these people she has just loved. And I know some of you are on the phone tonight. And I wanted to welcome you tonight. I want you to hear the rest of the story of how you can, in the middle of a firestorm, find peace of mind and go into intentional creation and make things happen in your life. I shared with Crystal at the time. I said, Crystal, you have economic requirements in your life, and you will not be able to address them if you choose to stay in this space. And many of you have challenges financially. You've either got quotas to meet, you've got salespeople you're managing, you've got a business you're building, something. And the question is, how often do we allow our own life experiences, that sucks, but I'm not okay, and we're not okay, and we get sucked into that, and we lose our enthusiasm and our even our desire for getting up and doing the work. and Crystal shared with you, as you apply these principles, particularly this one we're talking about tonight, of connecting with other people, when we begin the focus on serving others and we use our life experience to serve them, there is finally purpose in the suffering. There is finally joy in the journey, and there is finally healing in the soul. We do not heal when we wallow. Victims never heal. They just don't heal. Victors heal. And they heal because they're healing others. And as they heal, their own divine nature wakes up. Their goodness inside themselves. It doesn't matter whether you're selling insurance or whether you're selling beauty products. It doesn't matter whether you're in a relationship. It doesn't matter whether you're managing a team. When you can stop and see the other person, principle number one, notice what's important to another person. Just look. Instead of looking inside and wallowing in our own stuff, we see what's important to another person. Principle number two, we verbalize what we see. This is what you've been practicing. And then we begin a very sacred process of listening for doors. They've got the wall. We're listening for a door. That door may mean I'm really busy. I appreciate that. Appreciate that. This is what's going on for me. What's going on for you? And loving a person enough to create a safe place for them to begin this conversation. I have never seen a time in my lifetime where the walls are higher and appear to be thicker, but are in fact very thin. They just look thick. There's a requirement, a steeper requirement than ever before in connecting with people, that we actually show up to love them. We actually show up to serve them. We actually show up to find out what's important to them. And we watch that wall come down so quickly because people are so hungry to connect with someone who finally understands where they are, that they're not alone in their frustration. Now, anyone else that would like to share an experience they've had in the last week, finding what's important to a person, verbalizing it, listening for doors, and stepping into someone's world. Is there anyone else who would like to share? If so, just press star 6 and come off of mute. We'd love to hear what's happened. Oh, and I do hope there is someone who has. Well, if you get your courage, just interrupt any time. There we go. I heard a Dave.
Hey, Dave. This is Lisa Bauer.
Hi, Lisa.
How are you?
I am doing really well tonight. Great to hear your voice.
Thank you. Hey, I wanted to share something that was just a little, it's not exactly what you were asking for, but it directly relates to Crystal and the effectiveness of what she said she practiced.
Please do.
May I?
Please.
Thank you. I have coaching with Crystal at 5:30 a.m. on Thursday mornings, and this happened this last Thursday morning. And I had had a very, very rough week leading up to Thursday, a divorce that was finally finalized after 3.5 years, and right behind that, a notice that I was going to spend a week in the hospital with my daughter, who's 35 years old and brain damaged, while they purposefully induce seizures and have her hooked up to machines. And this is after a suicide attempt that she had done when she was 14 years old that left her brain damaged. And I could not wait for Thursday. I used the tools that I've had at my disposal to get me through to Thursday, and I just couldn't wait for Thursday morning to talk with Crystal. And so this is all pent up inside of me, and I'm just passionate, I think is the word I would use. Crystal would probably say something different, but I felt all of the emotion about it, and it was an amazing thing that she did. What she did. I'm also in recovery, for those that don't know, and I'll be 20 years sober this Saturday. So I have some other tools at my disposal, one of which is a book called the 12 and 12 about our steps and traditions in recovery. And I'm sitting there, and I'm so ready to talk about all this stuff with Crystal. And Crystal asked me, do you have your 12 and 12? And I said, right in the middle of this, she just stopped me cold. Really made me angry. I was like, no, I got to get this out. And she stopped me cold. And I said, yes. And she had me turn to this page. And she said, turn to page 79. And she had me read. And it took three times of reading the sentence before I understood what it was saying. And she led me right straight to the sentence, and it says, so in some cases, we cannot make restitution at all. And she'd stop me, and that's only halfway through the sentence. And she did this like three times before I realized what was in my sack still. Of trying to make up for what happened 21 years ago, and that I was still carrying that. And what she pointed out to me, and I had no idea she was dealing with all of this stuff that she's just shared. She was so focused on quieting the storm that was going on inside of me. And it was so effective, Dave. It was a huge turning point in my entire life. That 1 hour I spent with her, because she focused on using the principle of stepping into my world, understanding the first thing that needed to happen was to quiet my spirit so that I could focus on that. And she walked me through this process with these principles. I won't take up too much time with sharing the details, but I have to absolutely commend her and this program and the way that you use these principles. Because there was, through listening to her and then applying the things I've heard you talk about and she talk about, I'm calm and I'm prepared to go and do this in 2 weeks. And it was a life-changing moment. So I just wanted to tell her thank you, and also to commend her and let you know what a fine job she did.
Thank you for sharing on many levels. And I was just holding my emotions back as you were sharing. In the context of our conversation, you've been carrying this around in a sack for 21 years. Do you think anybody else is carrying something like that in theirs?
Oh, my God. I've run into people all week long, and it's made me so hyper-aware of stepping into other people's worlds and helping them just quiet the storm for just a moment. It's been phenomenal.
You answered the question. Beautiful. Because when we engrave it on our hearts and we own it, we stop dragging it. It's now a rich resource through which we can better and more effectively connect with another person. Way to be, Lisa. Way to be, Crystal. Thank you. This is why we study the principles. Not everyone will have a situation as traumatic as these two powerful women. But our challenges are somewhat relative. Because some of us handle more, and some of us, small things can really get to us. They're not small to us. So whatever it is, the secret is what's in your sack. How long you've been dragging around. Grave it on your heart. Wonder if anybody else is struggling with that thing. And I love what you said, Lisa. You become hyper aware of other people. You hear things differently. You see things differently. You show up differently. And may it be so bold to say that the partner that you have, that power greater than yourself, who's your partner in serving other people, will put people on your path who you uniquely can serve. Is that true? You may have gone back on mute.
Absolutely true. And again, you're going back to just being aware that this has come from the partner and the loving God that uses all of that kind of thing in order to serve others. It's what made me and helped me stay sober for coming on 20 years. And just a little side note, that little gal who's 35 now will be at my birthday celebration with me this Saturday, and I get the joy of experiencing that with her.
Oh, wonderful. And we will be celebrating with you on Saturday. Congratulations.
Thank you, Dave.
thank you for sharing, both of you for sharing tonight. This has been precious. I have spent a week dealing with some people that are in extreme pain. And it's interesting that pain sometimes creates anger. And anger impacts our minds so negatively, it releases what are called fear dendrites out of our amygdala, our fight or flight center. It shuts down our brain so that it can centralize all of the energy in that fight or flight center. We don't get to show up. And sometimes it's hard to show up, us to show up and love those people. Og said, I can melt all hearts like into the sun whose rays soften the coldest clay. Just know as you're going through this process of stepping into someone's world, some of you may have tried something this week and didn't get the result you'd hoped to get immediately. Don't quit. Continue to unconditionally love the person no matter how angry they get, no matter how frustrated they get. Be bigger than their anger. Time is on your side. Time is a great healer. Og does not give us a time frame when he says, melt all hearts. But I can tell you from life experience, it does eventually melt even the coldest hearts. The most angry, bitter people can have their hearts softened. So as you're stepping into someone's world, we've also learned a great lesson from Lisa. And that is that when we bring our life experiences, this heightened level of awareness, and you're connecting with people. Let's say, for an example, you're an insurance agent. You're sitting down with someone, and you've got your script, and instead of going through that, you step into their world, and you find out what's going on, and you find out you've had an experience similar to that. And so you ask them a question, have you ever done this, or did you ever make you want to do this, or and all of a sudden they're going, oh, man, this guy gets me. And the walls come down, and a safe place is created. And when that safe place is created, people share with us wonderful things, their dreams, their hopes, their wishes, their pain, their frustration. They share it. It's going to be very important that you hold it very carefully. You do not need a script to step into somebody's world if you bring your life experiences to the table. Just listen. Don't try to figure out a clever question. Don't try to figure out something cool to say. Sometimes we simply need to lean forward and say, I'm listening. Or help me better understand this. Share with me what you're thinking here. Just be real. Show up for them. We can't fake this piece. We cannot manipulate this piece. And when we do, the walls start to come down. Now the walls are down. We move to principle number 5. And that is we try on their dream. Now I remember when I had this dream, and for those of you who have been through this a couple of times, bear with me while I share a little bit of this dream. It was such a bizarre night. It was so vivid. I had been pondering this very topic. I had been concerned about learning such sacred information and then having someone misuse it to manipulate somebody into buying something. And I had the dream, and I was in this dream I was sitting on the top of a hill, very tall hill, with a gentleman, and I was aware that he was in an emotional prison. He was in a lot of pain. And we looked down this, like a mountain, down to this little harbor, and there was a sailboat. And it was so far away, it was very little. It's probably a 35-foot sailboat. But from where we were, it looked very little. And he said, would you please go down and move my sailboat to a safe harbor? And I remember agreeing to do so. And I remember feeling really good about agreeing to serve him in that way. I went down, I moved the sailboat from harbor to harbor. I finally found this harbor. And I remember from the back of the boat watching myself flip off the starboard side. And then I was in the water and I was coming out. I just remember, this is where I'd want my boat to be. It was playful, it was wonderful, it was safe. It was exactly where I would put my boat. I just knew this was the place for his boat. So I went back up the mountain to tell him. And I still remember as I was approaching him that I could see him all of a sudden be at ease. And I hadn't even spoken. How is it possible that he could be at ease when I hadn't spoken? We know in the same amygdala where that fight-or-flight center is, there's also an abundance of mirror neurons, mirror, mirror on the wall. Very unusual mirror neurons. They fire at twice the speed of a normal neuron. They're like a radar system. It comes through our eye, instead of going through the thalamus, goes to the amygdala. Someone can actually have these sensations when their optic nerve is not working, because the eye is still picking up the image, going back to the amygdala and recording a feeling. They can feel what they're seeing. They can't see the image, but they can feel it. It's called affective blindness. The amygdala sees far more than our optic ever picks up and sends signals to our body before we have conscious thoughts. We show up duplicitous, double-minded, trying to act like we care when we really don't. Someone's mirror neurons pick it up. They get a warning signal. Danger, danger, Mr. Robinson. If we are at peace, it'll send a message to our body that it's okay. Well, how does this work? Well, we have on our face 200 muscles. Billions of combinations of muscles. Mirror neurons can read every one of those combinations far more than any FBI agent, special trained interrogator, can read. And it reads those and sends those signals to our body. We cannot fake caring. Can't fake it. But when we really do care, and we really have tried on someone's dream, they're at peace. I walked up to him. He was at peace. I shared with him with such enthusiasm, such commitment. There was nothing being held back. This is where I put your boat. This is why I think it's a great idea. And he said, thank you, thank you. I didn't have to sell him on it at all. He just knew it was right. Well, I woke up and I was lying in bed and I was going, what in the world was that all about? Then I had this impression. The sailboat was his dream. He had asked me to take his dream, he pointed out what it was, and to put it in a safe place, is what we're offering to someone in terms of advice or products really in their best interest or ours? Are we really there to serve them based on their needs, based on what we might know? Crystal, stop someone midway. It was in their best interest to read something and to go deep very quickly. That was in their best interest right then. If we step into someone's world and we find out they're a rattlesnake, we don't put them in our sleeping bag. Conversely. But now we know their dreams are the things we're about to share truly going to bless their life. Now, they don't necessarily need to agree with it. This isn't about being naively kind. It's about being deadly accurate. And with conviction, total conviction, knowing with great confidence that you can share what you're about to share, knowing that it'll bless that person's life. I can tell you right now, their mirror neurons will read that for what it is. And they'll be unusually calm. Wow. Now we share. The question we have in principle number 6, is it the right time? We've taken down their walls. We've learned their hopes and their dreams. We've tried them on to make sure what we're about to share is really going to bless their lives. Now the question becomes, is this the right time to do it? Has enough been said today or tonight? What do we be best to say, I'd like to ponder this for 24 hours and get back with you tomorrow night. Would that work? Would 2 o'clock or 4 o'clock be better? Or would 10 o'clock in the morning, whatever you want to say. It might be better to wait. If we do and we come back, we start with, share with me what you've been thinking since we met. Tell me more about that. Step right back into their world. See if anything's changed. Is there new information? We don't come with expectation. We come to serve. If it is the right time, then we begin principle number 7, which is gaining agreement. And gaining agreement is the opportunity for us to be able to say to someone, however you would like to say it, there are some things I would like to share with you. Tantamount to saying, would you be willing to come into my world? Now, I want you to see this visual, that you're in your world, you step outside your world, you step across the bridge, you're standing at someone's wall, the door opens, you step in, you're talking to them. Now it's time for you to share. You take them by the hand, you walk outside of their wall, cross the bridge into your world, and you begin to share. Now what happens when there's an objection? I can tell you what happens far too often in society. Someone makes a statement. I don't know that I could be a salesperson, or I don't know that I need that much of this, or whatever it might be. Statement. The risk is this. Look, buddy, I have invested 42 minutes in stepping into your world and finding out about all your hopes and dreams. It's my turn. Shut up and just listen. Hopefully you don't do that, but that's a risk. The other risk is that objection we're going to treat as a question, and we're going to answer it. Matter of fact, they even call it answers to objections. When's the last time we answered comments? Comments demand a question. Comments demand a question, not an answer. Well, I don't know that I can sell. Well, share with me your experience in selling. What's your greatest concern? Tell me more about that. The person now can be heard and understood. And we quite often find out it really wasn't an objection. Maybe there's some fear. Maybe they've never had an opportunity or a safe place to take it on. And you may be the first safe place. This may be the moment when they finally find the courage to do it, because you cared enough about them to find out about it and why. Let us be very careful in knowing that intrinsic validation, these 7 steps, finding out what's important, verbalizing it, listening for doors and stepping into their world, creating a safe place, trying on their dreams, making sure it's the right time, and gaining agreement is not a linear process. It's an art form. It may require that we go right back into their world. Well, tell me more about that. We just take them by the hand, walk right back in their world, sit down, and we continue to listen. We are gaining connection with a human being. We are serving a human being. We are not forcing, manipulating, or coercing someone to do something the way we want to do it. We are here in their service. And when we do this, the rewards are enormous. Because once someone has trust, the speed of a transaction goes up considerably. Stephen M. R. Covey wrote the book, The Speed of Trust. I highly recommend it. When trust is slow, speed is slow. Trust is high, speed is fast. We gain trust by actually caring and listening. The power is in the silence. Now this week, I want you to take this a step farther, or further. We're going to have some risks. Some of you may have seen what's important to someone and you verbalized it. Listened for a door, and you stepped into their world, and you're creating a safe place, and you ended up in an endless conversation. Or somebody shared something that you've been through, experienced, and you just felt so tempted to tell them your experience. We don't share our experience till we get to step 7. Right now, they just want to know that you hear theirs. We don't want to trump theirs with an even cooler experience. We just want to hear theirs. Listen for theirs. So whenever you're tempted to tell your story, bite your tongue and ask another question. You'll feel it in the moment. You want so badly to tell it. It's so cool. Don't tell it. The only time this could be an exception is if you're in a situation that you just, you don't have a frame of reference. The closest thing is, and you can honestly share, you know, I don't have a frame of reference for this. Gosh, the closest experience I've had is this. What is it like for you? You can share your experience that way. Or if someone is going through a very tragic experience, like the loss of a loved one, for Crystal to say, you know, this is what happened to me this last week. What's happening for you? Just as a way to get into that discussion. But often we want to tell our stories because we're just so excited about our experience. It's like grabbing somebody by the nape of the neck, yanking them out of the world, across the bridge, into our world, sitting them down and talk, then picking them up by the nape of the neck, across the bridge, in their world, and setting them down. If you can see the visual, we don't want to be guilty of that, not in this step. Step 4. The second thing is we may want to narrow the topic. Like, for example, let's say that you are in the networking business and you have facial products that you sell. And you really want to talk to this old high school friend of yours about your business. So you call them. They agree to meet you for lunch. Come, let's get together for lunch. They're somewhat unsuspecting. They think they're coming to meet you. You're coming to sell them on your business. You sit down with them. And one of the great dangers is a conversation starts something like this. So what's been happening in your life? You could add to that for the last 28 years. And for the next hour and a half, they'll be sharing what's going on in their life. That's what you asked. You can step into their world. You can create a safe place. You can do all of that, but you're not in the context of what you want to discuss. You're way off in left field having a great conversation. And they may want to just talk. And an hour and a half into this lunch, you're going, man, I've got to be back to my house in 15 minutes. How can I segue into a conversation about my business? And then we awkwardly often say something like, you know, the reason why I wanted to talk to you, so I've been in this new business, and I wanted to get your opinion, and all of a sudden it's like this gigantic lead balloon just hit the ground. Thud! Anybody here been there? Just smile if you have. Oh, this could be a really painful moment. You can narrow the context of a conversation and still be honoring and intrinsically validating and actually more truthful. Sounds like this. Sally, haven't seen you since high school. So much has gone on in our lives. I wanted to get together with you and see, with all of your life experience, how you feel about home-based businesses. What's your experience been? And you step right into their world. You learn everything you can about their hopes and dreams or interest or lack of interest or experience. Don't be defensive. Just listen. Because you're already on the topic. Are you open to other possibilities? Absolutely not. Then you get to go, well, tell me how things are going on in your life. And then you can just have a great conversation with an old friend and save the friendship. Build the friendship. But you can narrow the context of any conversation to the subject you would like to discuss. But once you step into their world, you want to honor them and their ideas and opinions. That's how you shorten the length of a conversation. Conversations, when you learn to do this powerfully, can be very short. I called a friend once, how you doing? Great. Really, how you doing? moments of silence do you really want to know? He shared. There was only need for one question. How seriously are you considering suicide? I could feel where I was, experience some of it. It doesn't take lengthy conversations. You'll get better at well-placed questions with time and experience. Now, I want to emphasize this point. No matter how poorly you do this at first, no matter how poorly, it may be the best intrinsic validating experience that person has ever experienced. I mean, ponder this. I asked this question last week. When was the last time someone cared enough about you to really listen? Really listen. Without needing to fix you. Just listen. It's really rare. Let us be one of those rare ones. Now, we can't talk about intrinsic validation and connecting with people without a few moments on partnership. I highly recommend you go into the tools and listen to this section by itself. I believe there's a God in heaven. What's beautiful is I give everyone the right to have their own conception. I believe whatever that is. I don't believe God's upset by your conception. He's pretty grounded. This I do know. God's mission is to bless the lives of people with joy. And when we make the conscious decision to stop wallowing in our stuff, to stop being victims, focused on us, we finally learn that we'd be less concerned about what other people think about us if we knew how little they actually do. And we begin focusing on serving other people. We will, by automatic default, have this great power as our partner. What a glorious thought. To be able to say, there's anyone I can serve today, put them on my path and I'll serve them. And get an inspired impression and act on it. And wow, know that you're in partnership with a power greater than yourself in blessing the lives of other people. And when your focus is blessing their lives, you watch the abundance flow into yours. Abundance is not something we win. It's not something we seek to receive. It is a sacred process in which we actively participate and eventually become. May we see people differently after this session. May we this week study scroll 2, I'll greet this day with love in my heart, agape love. The Greek said eros, pia, philo, agape, erotic love, motherly love, friendship, and then agape, a heightened level of awareness, seeing someone the way God sees them. Can we see a person unconditionally, show up for them, listen to them, create a safe place, see their walls come down, treat what we learn with dignity, and step into their dreams and try them on and see how they fit before we give them advice or sell them product and gain, find out if it's the right time, and if it is, gain agreement and step into their world. And when objections arise, recognize them as comments that demand questions, and ask them questions and step into their world and take down those walls. Care about people. Make them matter. People are hungry. This is not happening very often in our world. Sad scenario. Scott Irwin, I write about this in the material. Scott Irwin, who I'll be on coaching call with tomorrow. We've been coaching for 7 years. His associate I met with today, we've been coaching for 6. Amazing human being. I remember when we talked about intrinsic validation for the very first time, and he said, how many people know this? And I said, a few. And he said, can we keep it to ourselves? And I have permission to share that with you. He knew the power in this. I know that Scott has shared with me many occasions. I've written about some of them in the material. The day that One of his partners came crashing into the office, CPA in tow, yelling, screaming, accusing him of cheating and stealing and robbing him blind. And Scott said, "I'm so glad I read my scroll that morning. I'm so glad I was focused on intrinsic validation. I just stepped into his world, showed up for him, got him everything he needed, answered all of his questions, and he watched this hard and cold heart melt. And when the day was over, they all went to dinner like old friends. The pipeline involved was worth millions of dollars. Huge." He said, "I've made millions and I've saved millions using these principles." His office calls it IVing. We're IVing everyone. Intrinsic validating. I highly recommend this. It's counterintuitive to much of what you will be told in this world in terms of sales technique. People are sick and tired of technique. You are. You can see it coming 100 miles away. I don't know why others don't believe others can see it. We just see it, we know it, and we're tired of it. We want to deal with people who actually care about us and solving our problems. And that's true of every other person you meet. Be one of the rare ones. Be one who cares enough to partner with a power greater than yourself in the service of others. And be prepared next week to learn how to use your mind constructively so that you can receive inspired ideas and impressions and solutions to problems to drive this to another level. But this week, read your scroll. Listen for what's important to people. Look for it. Verbalize it. Listen for those doors, those verbal hints about what someone is thinking. Some of them are hurtful. The biggest ones are really hurtful. Don't react to them. Just step into their world. Create a safe place. Take down the walls. Narrow the context of the conversation if you need to. Try on their dreams. It's the right time. Gain agreement. And share with them what will serve them. Now we have just about 2 or 3 minutes left. I want to open this up for anybody who's been on the call who's going, "Oh, I just want to share this. I want to say this." Is there anyone who would like to send us off tonight with a thought or two? Just say, Dave, and come off of mute. This is your opportunity to come out. If you're speaking, we're not hearing you. Just so press star 6.
Dave?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Tim from Salt Lake.
Hi, Tim. Welcome.
Thanks. It's been a while since I've gotten the group call, so.
We're excited to have you with us tonight.
Well, thank you. Yeah, with all these steps, it was amazing where I'm a little nervous, so my voice is all over the place. This last weekend, I went up to Yellowstone for a friend of mine. And it was to take pictures for a family reunion. And it's interesting because I really connected with this woman from Seattle. And she lived a different lifestyle, very all over the place, travels a lot. And her family, you know, is very religious. And she's not, this particular woman. And her family, of course, judged her quite a bit. It was kind of interesting to see that. They haven't even seen her for quite some time. And so I saw them doing the typical things that I even used to do, of forcing people into my world, so to speak. And I saw this family doing the same thing, and after learning all the principles, especially timing, I was able to understand and to just love her. And there's moments where she even would flat out, like, "I'm part of this type of religion," and she would flat out say her opposition towards it right in my face, and I'm like, "Okay, all right," and I just smile, and it was literally like rain, just like in the scroll, where it's just rain that just drips off of you of those type of words, where usually I would be very defensive and want to fight back, but the whole entire weekend, without even saying one word of religion, but listening, connecting with her, entertaining the whole family, I like to do stand-up type of comedy type stuff, but we had our our private moments as well to really just connect. And she would talk about her son, and I just listen. And it was so interesting where it was all about the timing. I didn't say one thing of what really the family wanted to say to her all the time. And for me, I just validated her. I loved her. I really enjoyed being with her. And by the end of the time to leave from Yellowstone, it was the right time to say my two cents of where I've learned and where I've really literally become this type of love. And she even flat out said, you know, you took down so many assumptions. You destroyed so many walls and so many assumptions that I had for 20 years about either life or even this religion. And it's nice to have a breath of fresh air that someone can really be like you. And so I just expressed my appreciation for her. And it was seriously the most meaningful thing that I even crave, the service of people. I crave that fruit or that feeling more than I do of any type of accumulation for my own well-being or for my own consumption. But it was just that type of experience. And then I heard even a few days ago that this woman asked about me. We still keep in contact, but she asked about me of just like how I became this type of guy, because I've experienced a lot what she's gone through, and then I was able to do things for the right reasons, and she saw that example, but especially experienced that love, and I did it at the right time.
Oh, Tim. Is that your phone, Tim?
That's another one. Another person.
It's okay. Don't worry about it. It's okay. Now, two things I'd like to share with you, if I may.
Yeah, go ahead.
Your world. One, you said you were nervous when you first started.
Yeah.
How do you feel now?
Oh, absolutely calm and focused and at peace. It always happens like that when I first start off.
For those who are listening who have had the same kind of nervousness, this is a safe place to share. And Tim, I'm so grateful you shared that specific example, because quite often it's hard to see what's important to another person when they are different than us. We want to fix them. We want to straighten them out. We want to get them in the straight and narrow instead of just loving them. I sense the religion you're in, and it'd be fair to say that you're a Christian, and sounds kind of Christ-like to me. Not a bad idea, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, not a bad idea. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, you win hearts with love. You just never change people trying to fix them. You win people with
absolutely
love. Melt all hearts like in the sun as rays soften the coldest clay. You touched my heart tonight, and thank you. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
And Lisa, thank you for sharing. Crystal, thank you for sharing your story. Thank you all for being here tonight. Go listen to this material. Practice these seven principles. Be in partnership this week and feel what it feels like to feel what Tim was feeling. And he said grounded and peaceful. I thought that was really cool. We all want peace of mind, and it comes from listening and loving and showing up for people. Because when we're doing this, we can't be wallowing in our own stuff. And it is more precious than material things, isn't it, Tim? That is so awesome. Now, I'll tell you, money and material things don't hurt. But sometimes we're seeking those to get this. Congratulations. So take this on. Come back prepared next week to take on goals and expectations. Let's really dive into this. Some of you have heard me speak on this topic before, but yet we continue to engage in fantasy where we're escaping into the future to a time when we're rich and what it'll be like then. We have not yet totally disciplined ourselves to use our mind constructively, and intentional creation of our dreams demands it. Let us come prepared next week to really dive into this, get it into our souls and implement it in our lives at a core level. So those late nights when you're lying in bed and you just want to go off with your Ferrari somewhere, you choose a different option to use that visualization in a constructive way. When you're under stress and frustration, you want to just have no more stress and no more pain and no more frustration and just want to escape from it all, you should choose to go into intentional creation and use your mind creatively to get an inspired idea, impression, or solution to a problem and ignite your passion and reignite your energy. Come prepared next week to really take this on. This is going to be the crux. We just talked the foundation, which is connecting with people. We won't do it unless we use our mind constructively. So let us come and take this on next week. Dave? Thanks, everybody, and have a great night. Ooh, somebody said Dave. Yes.
Yeah, Dave, it's Eileen. You were going to give me a phone number.
Eileen, thank you, thank you. I have it right here.
Okay.
We're going to start in a few minutes. Those who really love Og Mandino and want to share it with others, we have an affiliate program, just a standard, wonderful affiliate program. It's very exciting. We're going to have an affiliate meeting here in a few minutes, and that meeting phone number is 218-936-7999, and the code is 366-398-POUND, 366-398-POUND. Eileen, you and I are going to have to talk next week on this call. Jump out. Eileen came up to the cabin with her husband Jonas a couple of weeks ago, and we just had the most delightful weekend.
Yeah.
Jonas is 92 and is in a wheelchair, and we had help at the dock with people putting him in the boat, and we took him out on the lake and had a blast, and we strapped him in a four-wheeler and took him up in the mountains and through the wild, crazy hills. We just had a blast, and so good to have you on the call, Eileen.
Thank you.
And we'll talk more about this as we get deeper into these principles. Thank you so much, everybody, and have a great night. And we'll be back with you next Tuesday for the next celebration of life. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Steve.